The following program is work safe and family safe, right up until the song at the end, which mentions whiskey in a positive way. Use your own discretion at that point. Hello and welcome to today's Hacker Public Radio. I'm Pokey and I'll be your host for today. Before I get started, I'd like to address one thing. A lot of times when you hear people talking on the internet and they mention their nicks or their handles or whatever you'd like to call it, you wonder where it came from and why they chose it. And Pokey is a pretty stupid nickname, I gotta admit. The fact is I didn't choose it. It's been chosen for me time and time again from people who have never met one another, and it's just a name I can't get rid of. I suppose I'm a bit of a procrastinator, so I've probably earned it for that, and for a couple other reasons that I won't go into here today. That being said, what I would like to go into is a little bit on threads and thread repair. And by threads, I don't mean the kind in programming or processes. I mean the kind of threads that are on screws and nuts and bolts. Most people don't give threads much of a thought. Most people don't have reason to, but being hackers, eventually some of us are going to turn to hardware hacking or to making or to assembling or to repairing things of a mechanical nature, at which point you're going to want to know a little bit about threads and how they work. First of all, the two basic ones you can concern yourself with are wood screw types and machine threads. The types in wood screws, as far as I can tell, there doesn't seem to be much of a standardization to what's called the thread pitch, or how many threads per inch you're going to have. In a metric, it wouldn't be per inches. I don't even know if it's per millimeter. I forget how it's counted. But anyway, in a wood screw, you seem to be limited to fine and coarse threads. Coarse threads drive quicker. Fine threads seem to hold a little stronger in harder material. In softer materials, I usually prefer a coarse thread. You cut into it a little bit less and you keep it together a little better. Another thing to remember about wood screws is that wood has grain, and that grain is important. And if you look at, say, a block of wood, you'll see on, say you've got like a cube of wood. On four sides of wood, you're going to see the grain running from one end to the other. On two of those sides of that cube, you're not going to see the grain running anywhere. What you're going to see is a rougher surface called the end grain. You never want to drive a screw into end grain. Its strength is not in that direction. It will not hold. The best way to picture end grain failing with a screw in it would be to imagine holding a fistful of spaghetti, not wet spaghetti, but dry spaghetti right out of the box. And you go and drive a screw into the center of it. And in every turn, your little bit of thread that's cutting in and pulling in, it's just cutting a piece of spaghetti in half, or not in half, but a little chunk off of it, the size of the distance between threads. And every time you turn that, you're going to get another little piece and another little piece until eventually your screw's all the way in, and you've got nothing holding your screw in place except for little pieces of spaghetti, or maybe even a half a piece if you're lucky at some points. And give that screw a tug and it's going to fail. And the same is true of any wood you try to drive into end grain. You always want to drive a screw across the grain. It's much stronger in that direction. Again, you can picture driving it through some spaghetti that way and it's going to hold, because you haven't cut anything in half and you're pulling across it. That holds pretty well. Anytime you take a screw out of wood or to plastic, this applies to plastic, and you need to put it back in there, always use the same screw you took out of there, or an identical screw. If you use something with a different thread pitch, you're going to cut new threads in there and you're going to weaken it considerably. So you don't want to try and use a different screw in there. One technique that I always like to use with any bolt or any screw is I like to back thread them when I'm putting them back in. Meaning if it's a standard right-hand thread that you know, righty-tighty, lefty-loosey is the old rhyme, I like to turn it counterclockwise, which is the direction that loosens it, as I'm inserting it. And I'll apply a little bit of pressure and turn it counterclockwise, and you'll feel the screw push back until it kind of snaps into place. It'll fall in. And that's when you know you've got those threads of the screw lined up with the threads that have been cut previously in the piece of wood. It also works for nuts and bolts for metal, the threads that are cut in there. Then you can drive that screw safely in there, and you're not cutting any more threads, and you're retaining as much of the durability and strength of that material as you possibly can. But say there aren't any threads in there anymore. You've pulled them out, or you've cut them out, or someone has, and it's damaged, and that screw won't hold. You know, you've tightened it and tightened it and tightened it, and eventually it just kind of spins free in there. Is there a fix? Absolutely there's a fix for a piece of wood, and it doesn't necessarily require a larger screw. Sometimes you're fastening something to that piece of wood that won't accept a larger screw, so you feel like you're stuck. What can you do? Maybe a longer screw? Okay, maybe the wood's not thick enough to accept a longer screw. The answer here is you go out to the grocery store, you look up and down the aisles until you find a box of hardwood toothpicks. I don't like the bamboo toothpicks for this. I understand bamboo is considered a hardwood by some, but in this application it found that it doesn't work as well. Find yourself a box of hardwood toothpicks, and the best kind are the ones that are only sharp on one end and flat on the other. You get yourself a hammer, and you put as many of those toothpicks into that hole at the same time as you can. Don't push any in and then try to fit more in, but try and get a big bundle of them in there all at once and push them in there as hard as you can, and then tap them in there as far as you can with that hammer. Of course, I left out the most important part is you need to put some glue all over them before you start. You want to put them up there dry first to see how many you're going to drive in. Take them back down and just smear them with glue. White glue, Elmer's glue, woodworker's glue, those are pretty much the best thing you can use. Woodworker's glue is basically just Elmer's white glue with a little bit of dye in it, maybe a little bit of sawdust to give it that color. Some people like Gorilla Glue a lot. I haven't used it myself. I don't know how I feel about it in wood. I'm not natively a woodworker, so I tend to go on what people I trust tell me, and no one I trust has ever told me Gorilla Glue, but other people have said it's okay. Your results may vary if you go and try that. Other than that, I've always heard that regular old woodworking glue or Elmer's glue is the best thing you can use on wood. Anyway, once you get those driven in as far as you can, take a utility knife, a razor blade. Don't like X-Acto knives or the little, you know, break-off blade for this because I don't think they're really durable enough, but a nice utility knife, and cut them flush with the piece of wood, as flush as you can. And what you've then done is you've taken a piece of wood that's harder than the piece you started with, because you're probably working with pine, made a composite of wood and glue, which is extraordinarily strong, much stronger than the piece of wood that you've put it in. You've made something stronger than what you started with. Give it a day or so to dry, and you can drill a new hole to fit your original screw into that little bit of hardwood. And I understand you're drilling into end grain there, and I just told you not to screw into end grain, but because of the composite nature of it that you've added the glue, it actually does hold together in this case. It works just fine. I've done this dozens of times. It works fantastically well. I've never had one fail yet. And the trick was taught to me by a master carpenter and cabinet maker, so I trust it, and it's always worked for me. Plastic, you follow a lot of the same rules as wood as far as trying to remove your screws and reinsert them as gently as possible. As far as repairing them goes, it's going to depend on the plastic you're using, and again, your results may vary. The best thing you can do there is just to learn a little bit about the plastic that you're working with and try and figure out how to do that. I haven't really found too many fantastically successful ways of repairing damaged plastic. You're kind of on your own there. So I'll move on to metal. Anytime you're putting a screw into metal, you're going to get a much stronger hold, of course, than you would with wood and a much more accurate thread. So what you want to do there, of course, is to use machine thread, screws and bolts for that. American bolts are measured in the diameter of the bolt and the thread pitch. None of those measurements has anything to do with the size of the wrench that you're going to put on the end of that bolt to turn it. That you're going to have to figure out on your own, but trust me, if you're using a bolt that is measured with standard American sizes, you want to use an American wrench on that. Don't try to use a metric wrench. The only exception being a half-inch bolt. Not a half-inch diameter, but a half-inch bolt head. You can go ahead and use a 13 millimeter on those typically. 13 millimeters is only just slightly smaller than half-inch, and usually they even fit tighter and work a little better. But that's the only exception. metric bolts are probably what you're going to come across more often. The only place you really see American bolts anymore is in the home, in construction. Plumbing fittings are still American sizes. Maybe sometimes furniture might still be in American sizes and some of the other assemblies in your home. Thankfully, most other applications have moved on, have progressed, and have begun using the metric system. For the most part, every American car that I'm aware of uses metric bolts almost exclusively. It's a pain when they mix them up and use some metric and some American. Bicycles. I've never worked on a bicycle with an American fitting that I can remember. To my knowledge, I've never worked on a single one. Everything is metric. Computers, they appear to be metric to me, but usually there's a Phillips head screw in the end there, so what the heck, just use a Phillips. And speaking of Phillips, a lot of people don't seem to know that there are different sizes of Phillips head screws, different sizes of Phillips head screwdrivers, very specific sizes of Phillips head screwdrivers. And your Phillips head screwdriver should have the size printed right on the side of it, or stamped into it, or etched into it, or something. The most common size being a number 2. The largest I've encountered being a number 3, and they go down from there, number 1, 0, double aught, and triple aught. Try to get the right size Phillips head screwdriver for your screw, or you're going to strip the head of that screw out. That's a whole nother subject. I'm not even going to get into that today. When you do that kind of damage, you a lot of times you're up a creek. Try and have a nice assortment of Phillips head screwdrivers so that you're not using the wrong size. Another handy one to have, if you can find it, if you can find a bit that says P2R on it, or Phillips 2R, or Phillips 2 rounded, that is one of the nicest screwdriver bits or screwdrivers that you can have. It fits number 2, but it fits it a lot more snugly than the original pointy design, and it just works better. Most tool stores that I've come across don't seem to know what I'm talking about when I ask for it. They really have no idea. You've got to look it up yourself in a catalog, or look on the shelf and find it. The only place I've been able to reliably find it is in an assortment pack of interchangeable bits at Sears. They have on the wall there, and it comes with maybe 25 or 50 bits. I forget how many was in there. And like 5 or 6 of them are the rounded ones, and the rest are just, they're bits, they're pretty much useless to me. If you want them, give me a holler and you can have them. They're mostly just regular old Phillips, and I think there were some flatheads in there, and I don't want them. Don't need them. That's a good thing to have. But anyway, for machine threads, you can repair those as well, too. It takes some more specialized tools to do that, and it may or may not be worth your investment to use those, or to buy those tools. But if you can find them cheap, or if you see them on sale sometime, you probably want to pick them up, especially a set of metric ones. And what I'm referring to are called taps and dies. A tap is a threaded rod. It looks kind of like a bolt with material missing the length of it, usually 3 or 4. They're called flutes, where it's been cut out. So what you have left looks like 3 or 4 blades of jagged teeth running down that. A standard normal tap, you can run into a hole that's got no threads in it whatsoever, and if done properly, it will cut the threads into that hole, and you can run a bolt into it after. It'll fit beautifully, it'll fit perfectly. You can also use a tap in an existing hole if the threads inside there are damaged. You can run that down there and repair the threads to a certain degree. They're not going to be quite as strong as original, because some of the material is going to be missing. Some of it will have been distorted and weakened, but you can take out material with a tap. It removes material, and it will remove what shouldn't be there. It won't necessarily put back what should be there. You can think of it that way, as far as it weakening. The proper way to use a tap is to, of course, find the right size that you're going to use, find the right handle that you're going to use on the end of it to turn it with, and find yourself some form of lubrication. WD-40 works pretty well for this. It doesn't work all that well for much else, frankly. WD-40 evaporates pretty quickly. It's not a very good lubricant over the long term. It's okay to break some rust and to lubricate something for a short period of time, but it's not a good long-term lubricant. But it's perfect for this, as is any motor oil. I don't care if you even used motor oil. At the end of your dipstick, just drop a little bit on that tap, and maybe do that once or twice, or three times, while you're tapping or retapping those threads. So make sure there's lubrication there. If you do it right, it'll keep from chipping. And the right technique to use, if you're starting a new hole or starting new threads in a new hole, that's a little trickier. You've got to kind of get it started first. You've got to use some pressure and try to go back and forth a little bit, using pressure as you're going clockwise and then let off as you're going counterclockwise until it starts to bite. Once you start going in to the hole, then you go back to doing it the way that you do as if you were pairing it. And that would be to turn it in maybe a quarter or a half a turn, you know, meaning 90 or 180 degrees, and then back it off a little bit. And what you'll do is you'll start hearing and feeling, as you're backing it off, little snaps. Those are the little pieces of material that you're cutting out, breaking off, and they will fall into the flutes that are cut in the tap. That material you're removing will kind of build up in there. And you'll have to, every once in a while, run that tap all the way back out, clean those flutes out. This is why I like WD-40 for this, because you can just spray it out and it kind of powers it out of there. And then go back in, and you can turn it clockwise as many turns in until you get back to where you were before, and then go again. You can go half a turn. If you're brave, you can go a full turn and then back it off a quarter. You kind of get the hang of it, the feel of it, depending on the material that you're trying to tap. The easiest and best thing to tap is steel. The worst thing and the hardest to try to tap is cast iron. That's very, very hard. It doesn't like to cut, and you're going to break a lot of taps learning how to do that properly. I wouldn't recommend it. Another horrible thing to have to tap is regular soft aluminum, the stock stuff that you buy at the hardware store. It likes to tear more than cut, and you can clog up a tap real fast and real easy and break the teeth off of it. Probably won't break it in half, but you could very easily break the teeth off of your tap. Be real, real careful, and don't turn those very far at all. Sometimes only an eighth of a turn before you back it out, and maybe only a full turn before you take it all the way out and clean it again. It's real tricky. I have had professional machinists disagree with me on this point and say that soft aluminum is very, very easy to tap. However, I believe they're using much better taps than I own, and I believe they're using a much higher grade of aluminum than what I'm buying at the hardware store, and what you're probably going to buy at the hardware store if you buy some aluminum. Not to mention, they're probably not buying their own taps anyway, so they don't care if they break one or two, and they've got plenty of spares lying around. I've never had spare taps lying around. They're pretty expensive, even the ones that I'm buying. And I'm not buying cheap taps. I don't own cheap ones, but I don't own the machinist grade stuff either. In either case, it's almost a moot point, as you're not going to tap aluminum very often. It's a much better idea to use a nut and a washer behind that. Steel has a much stronger tensile strength than aluminum, and you're far less likely to damage what you're working on by over-tightening that bolt. It's a little tougher to over-tighten a steel bolt that's clamping on aluminum than it is to over-tighten a bolt that's run through aluminum and pulling on that aluminum itself. If you have to tap aluminum, always use a real tap. Don't try to use a self-tapping screw, which is something I haven't even talked about, and I really don't want to too much, except to say that I have tried to use self-tapping screws in aluminum before, and they wind up just distorting the aluminum as opposed to removing the material, causing a tremendous amount of pressure all the way around that screw until it just kind of locks in place. You can't turn it one way or the other, and when you finally try to take it out, you take a lot of the aluminum with you, a lot more than you intended to take. The aluminum does tear away. It does a thing that's called galling, where it will stick to the tool, or it will stick to, say, a surface of a bearing or something that's running on it, and will just tear away from itself, and it will have a stronger bond to the usually steel piece than to itself, and you'll get little pits and pockets of aluminum that no longer exist, and you can have that inside your threaded hole. And you'll probably get that inside your threaded hole if you try with a self-tapping screw. So that's a big no-no. Hardened aluminum, or tempered aluminum, or heat-treated aluminum, all those things are synonymous. You can tap that pretty easily. And if it's already been tapped, if you're just repairing threads, aluminum isn't actually as much of a problem. And cast iron also, if it's already been tapped, you can chase the threads to clean it out. Just do so carefully, because if you get to the point where you're cutting new threads, you're likely to break your tap. Break your tap, often a piece of cast iron, and you're in big trouble. Bring it to a mechanic, he'll know how to take care of it. But it's not something you're going to want to try to take care of on your own. A standard tap is tapered at the end. That's so that it can cut new threads. If you have a hole that goes all the way through your material, it's perfectly reasonable, safe, and acceptable to run that tap all the way through the material and just take it out the other side. If you've got what's called a blind hole, something that hasn't been drilled all the way through, you're not going to be able to get to the very bottom threads. You're going to have to make your mind up as to whether that's acceptable to you or not. If it is not acceptable, you need to get a tap that doesn't have a taper on it, and it's not called a tap anymore, it's called a thread chaser. And if you buy a thread chaser, that's all that you can do with it, is try and clean out threads that already exist. A thread chaser is never to be used to cut new threads. You'll destroy it immediately. I've mentioned destroying taps an awful lot so far, and now is probably a good time to mention that a good place to buy your taps is from one of the tool trucks that you might see parked outside of an auto mechanic shop. And the reason for that, unfortunately, they're very expensive there, but over the long run they're cheaper because they have a lifetime guarantee on all their stuff, and all you have to do is give them a call, find out where they are, and bring them that tool, and they'll replace it for you if it's broken. So that's not a bad place to pick those up. Whereas if you buy them at your hardware store, you break it, you're out of tap, you don't have that anymore. The partner of a tap, the other side of the equation, is an item called a die. And a die cuts threads into bolts or rods. Most bolts that you buy aren't going to have threads cut into them. They're going to have threads pressed into them, which makes them very strong. So keep that in mind, that if you have just a bare rod and you decide you're going to cut threads into it, cut new threads into it with a die, they're not going to be as strong. That fastener that you're creating is not going to be as strong as one that you can buy, so just keep that in mind. But other than that, it does the exact same thing as a tap, but it does it to a bolt, and it does it just as well. Every die that I know of has that taper in it for getting started. I don't know of one that doesn't have it. So what I would often do if I had a bolt that had to be threaded all the way to the cap is, once I was done cleaning those threads in it, would take it back off and turn it around, turn the die around, and use the backside that didn't have a taper. I've done that a couple times. I don't know if that's standard practice, but I've done it enough times to know that it works. And that's pretty, well, actually, no, there's one more thing. Say you got a piece of metal and you strip the threads out of it completely. No tap is going to help you, because a tap only removes material. It cannot put material back. And you've removed so much material that there is no way to get a new thread in it. Thankfully, you still are not so out of luck that you got to give up on this piece of material. You can repair those threads, believe it or not. What you wind up doing, you have to buy a thread repair kit. Usually you can get them at like an automotive store, an auto parts store. And what that kit will have in it is special sized drill bits. These are drill bits that you cannot buy in this size anywhere else. They're not American or metric size. You will drill into that hole to make it bigger. And then what you do is, they'll also give you a special tap that is not any standard size and you can only get in that thread repair kit. You'll tap new threads, brand new threads, into that hole. So you've got to do just like I was explaining before in creating new threads. You put a little bit of pressure on it, you get it started. Once you get it started, you can go to work just working back and forth so you don't break your tap off. And then there'll be a coil of metal and a tool to twist that coil of metal into the hole. And it'll thread in very easily, because it kind of works like a spring, in that as you're tightening it in there, it's not putting any pressure on the outside of it. And when it gets to the bottom of the hole, or as deep as you want it to be, you spin it backwards and it tightens up and you break off the little piece that you've been spinning. As long as you use the proper thread locker with that and give that thread locker time to cure, that repair is usually stronger than the one that it's replacing. They usually use a much stronger metal for that than what you've just taken the bolt out of. So it's a perfectly acceptable repair. You usually don't wind up backing those thread repairs out either when you take your piece apart again. You take your bolt out and that thread stays in the hole where it belongs. Since I mentioned ThreadLocker, there is one for that, but that's not the only use for ThreadLocker. There are several different grades and several different strengths of ThreadLocker. I would recommend that next time you are out shopping, you get a chance, go to an auto parts store and pick up a tube of blue Permatex ThreadLocker. It's the medium strength and it works great on just about everything. And basically all it does is it makes sure your bolt does not spin unintentionally. It inhibits rust to a good degree so that when you do get your bolt to spin a little bit, you can usually take it out with fingers or, you know, real easily with the tool that you've got. You won't have to fight to get your bolts out. Great for bicycles, cars, most things around the house. That's a good thing to have on hand. Lastly, the only other kind of thread repair that I've ever had to do that couldn't be done with anything I've talked about so far. Every once in a while you get a funny bolt, maybe it's too big to use a tap on, and I've had to manually file them with jeweler's files or with a thread file is another tool. Don't go buy a thread file. You'll probably never use it. If you ever do use it, it's probably not going to earn its keep because it's a very expensive tool. But if you've got jeweler's files, they're not out of the question. Just know that they're going to be a sloppier fit, a weaker fit than any of the other things that I've mentioned here today. I think that's about it as far as repairing threads. And the only thing I might suggest is that you don't damage the threads in the first place. There's about three ways you can damage threads. The first thing that you can do is to put the wrong screw in there, something with a different thread pitch. It looks like it'll fit. You start getting it in there. It even feels like it fits sometimes. That'll often happen going from an American to a metric thread or vice versa. It starts going in. It feels fine. You go, great. You put your tool on it. You start turning it. It gets a little harder. You go, okay, I'll have to turn it a little harder. You turn a little harder. The harder you turn it, the more you're damaging those threads. You're just destroying them in there. And you take that back out and find the right bolt or screw, and it's not going to fit either because you've damaged those threads so bad. And if you can force that one in there, half the time it'll go in, it'll get past the threads, and it'll fit correctly, and you won't have much trouble unless you try and take it out and put it back in again. Half the time it finds the wrong threads and follows the wrong threads, and it winds up cutting new threads across your other ones. That's called cross-threading. If you cross-thread a bolt into a hole, you're going to damage both the hole and the bolt, and you usually have to repair the threads in the hole and replace the bolt, or repair the bolt, and replacing it's usually preferential. Another way you can damage threads is just simply by cross-threading them, even with the right size screw. It can still happen, especially if there's a little nick or a chip in the threads of either piece. That's why I like back threading. I always like back threading to insert them. And I always use them, my fingers, to put them in before I ever put a tool on it. I'll put it as far in with my fingers as I can get it. Some people will put it right on the tool and just start driving it in there. That can be disastrous. It very often is. I had a very, very costly repair that I had to perform once because I thought it would be quick to just throw a bolt in my power ratchet, an air tool, and just drive it into a piece of a car. And I destroyed the piece and the bolt. It was in a car dealership at the time. It was a piece of warranty work, and you don't repair threads on warranty work like that. It's just not acceptable. And I had to buy a steering knuckle out of my own pocket. And do the labor out of my own pocket. That was a pretty expensive mistake. And since then, I've always learned, run those in with your fingers as far as you can before you ever put a tool on it, especially a power tool. And that includes little rechargeable screwdrivers. And the last thing that you can do to damage threads is to over-tighten what you're working on. That is a little tougher to explain. If you don't have a piece that has a spec and a specific torque and then a torque wrench to put that in with, you kind of have to go by feel, and that takes experience. And the best I can tell you about that is that the strongest bolt or a screw, a metal fastener, can hold into a piece of metal is when it threads into the point where it's all the way in, and then as you turn it, it stretches. And at its maximum stretch, it has its maximum strength. But once you go beyond that maximum stretch, once it gets easier to turn, you've gone beyond that point. Your bolt is weakening, it's giving up. You've gone too far, so try never to go that far with a piece of metal. Nearly the same could be said of a piece of wood or a piece of plastic. As you're turning it in there and you're tightening it up and you're snugging it up, if you feel like it's starting to get easier to turn and you're at the bottom already, you know it's tight and now it's starting to get easier to turn, you've just gone too far. If you stop right there and walk away, a lot of times you're okay with a piece of wood, but if you go any further, you're gonna wreck it and you're gonna have to wind up driving some toothpicks in there to fix it. And by the way, if you do that repair with the toothpicks, it is toothpicks that you want to use. Don't try using a dowel because it doesn't have the strength of the glue helping you out there. That's it for me in this episode. It's a much longer episode than I expected. I was thinking about 10 or 12 minutes, so I'm a little embarrassed at my long-windedness. So I apologize for the long length of it, but I feel I've been pretty thorough. If this is a new topic to you, you may have some questions. Feel free to give me a shout. I'm pdaily03@gmail.com. That's P like pokey. Daily is D-A-I-L-E-Y. 03@gmail.com, or hit me up in IRC. I'm there often enough that you probably get me during the day, and I'm usually in Ogcast Planet, #OgcastPlanet on irc.freenode.net. And the Songfight song that I've chosen for today, according to Songfight, is by Andrew Ayers and Guest. It makes no guess or mention of who the guest might be, so I have no idea. The name of the song is Outside Paradise, and I just thought this was a brilliant little song, a really nice take on the title that he was given, Outside Paradise. And if you can imagine someone giving you the title of a song before you've written the song, and then you have to write a song to fit the title, working under those constraints, that's one of the things I like best about finding this nice music on Songfight. It's just knowing how tough it must have been to work under those constraints, the elegant solutions to that problem that some of these people have chosen. And I really like how Andrew Ayers solved that problem with this song, Outside Paradise. His website, I think, is likeablindman.com. A lot of the links on the website are broken. It looks like he hasn't touched it in a while. The couple of songs that he did have on that website that the links were not broken, it sounds a lot like him. So I kind of think that that's him. I kind of think that that's his website, but it doesn't seem like he's working with it with the website anyway, so he may not care whether you grab the song from Songfight or go to his website. That's as much as I could find on it anyway doing the research. Thank you very much for listening to my episode of Hacker Public Radio, and have a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, or day, or night, whatever it is where you're at and when you're listening. And that's it. I'll leave you with the song. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Outside of paradise, there's a limit on fun. Whiskey and Cheez-Its, that's the best that I've done. Outside of paradise, trouble grows on trees. There's a bus take you out of this orchard, but the bus never leaves. The world rides a Harley, wears a scary leather jacket. You're limping down the highway, clutching your head. You lean on your one good foot, try to stay out of sight. The world's not a vampire, but it sure does like blood. Outside of paradise was where I met you. Away from these greasy skies, out under the blue. I'd like to watch TV now. I'm hoping it'll explain why it's so crowded in Brooklyn and inside my brain. Outside of Play-Doh, nothing's much fun. And that too gets crusty before your castle is done. Outside of paradise is where I met you. Far away from these greasy skies, out under the blue, we push hard in New York. We shove and we towards the great New York victory, being able to lead. If no one ever told you that there'd be days like these, I'm gonna tell you right now. Killing me quick. My skin is too skinny. Your hide is too thick. You're outside of Wichita. Been there for several years. Babe, don't ever go back. That I've done.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.